Back to My Garden, episode 58.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardeners. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Attention garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. And today we have a special guest joining us from Seattle, Washington, going all the way across the continent. Andrea is a writer, a blogger, an editor, a graphic designer, a passionate gardener, a naturalist, a photographer, a cook, a knitter, a costumer, an upcycler, and a singer. Today we're going to be chatting about native plant gardening from San Antonio to Seattle. I want to welcome to the show Andrea Patak.
Hi, Dave, and thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited that you're here. And I gave you a brief introduction, lots to go on there, but I want to get to hear your story, and I know our listeners want to know you as well. So, Andrea, take a minute or two and share with us a little bit about your background and how you got into gardening.
Okay, well, I am a second-generation American in the sense that my parents were both born here, but all four of my grandparents came from Europe. My father's from Poland and my mother's from Italy. Consequently, they both sets of grandparents had large gardens, both flowers and vegetables. So as a child, I always had these incredible gardens around. And then when I was 5 years old, my parents bought their first house, which happened to be the house that had been owned by the head of the village garden club. So this house came complete with this incredible garden. Roses, perennials, bulbs, everything you could think of, things blooming all year round. And I grew up playing in that garden and playing in my grandparents' gardens and always eating fresh foods from those gardens. So it was just a part of me. And of course, like most of us, once I went off to college and then started my own life, and especially living in an apartment, I completely became ungarden oriented until I bought my first home. And that house happened to be out in the Texas Hill Country, or the base of the Texas Hill Country, in a little town called Bulverde outside San Antonio, Texas. I had 5 acres, and it was in a fairly new development of 5-acre lots, so there was no other homes within sight when I moved in. And I had all kinds of incredible plans. I was going to, you know, garden all around the house, landscape, put in vegetables. And when I started to try to do it, I discovered that the majority of my property was solid limestone. Just to put in a few shrubs, I actually had to have guys come out with jackhammers and jackhammer enormous holes into the solid rock so that I could fill with dirt to plant things. So I quickly gave up the idea of planting what I wanted, where I wanted, because it was pretty obvious I could not afford to do that every time. And here it was. It was a fairly pristine natural site. There were scrub oaks, live oaks, native persimmon trees, which are really different from the cultivated persimmons, and then all of these other plants. Now, I grew up in New York State, so I was not familiar with Texas native plants at all. But the whole sort of native plant movement actually started in Texas. Lady Bird Johnson did her wildflowers movement. She wanted people to keep wildflowers growing along the highways. And consequently, she started getting people thinking about using natives as opposed to going out and buying mums or daffodils or whatever. So I decided to educate myself about it and got books. This was back in the early 1980s, so there was no internet at the time. And I started reading up, and I also just started going around my garden and observing and finding things that were obviously lovely plants, a little more ornamental. I had, you know, prickly pear cactus, but I also had things like native mountain laurel, native wild fragrant mimosa, and a number of other plants. I had connected with a young man who was studying horticulture and knew a lot about native plants, and he came out and walked around the garden with me and started to identify things for me and explain to me how they were. So at the time I said, well, if something is growing someplace on my garden, that means there's dirt there. And I learned to start nurturing those plants and weeding around them, pruning the persimmon trees so that they ended up looking like gorgeous sort of olive trees with these beautiful flowing, winding trunks. It was really quite incredible. And of course, because it was out in the middle of nowhere, I also had a lot of wildlife around the yard. And keeping my yard fairly wild, fairly natural, encouraged that wildlife to come in close. So I would see all kinds of wonderful things. And I really loved my Texas garden and nurtured it for about 5 years and got it to a state where it was really quite beautiful and a showpiece without me buying anything to plant. Then I had a major life change. Back in the early 1990s, I got divorced and I moved to Seattle. And after a little while in Seattle, I met someone and got married and bought a house and decided when it was time to work on the house here and the landscape that I was going to go ahead and research and try to use as many Washington natives as I could. And I've been pretty successful with that. We've been in the house now 20 years. And I'd say we're probably 50-50 native plants, cultivated plants, and then we have a large vegetable garden. So that's where I am right now, is cultivating my own garden and also encouraging others to plant and use natives as much as they possibly can.
My goodness.
So it's a long story.
I just had that feeling as a podcaster, like we're never going to have enough time to cover it.
Well, I did actually look at your prompts, and I've answered some of those questions. So I think we can probably nail it down a little bit.
When you're telling your introduction and your story, I take notes for the listeners. We have a lot of people listening to us who are in their car right now.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We don't want them taking notes on their iPhones when they're driving. And I've already up to two paragraphs. So folks, listeners, I'm going to put all of Andrea's links and the show notes on the blog at Back to My Garden. First thing you want to do is make sure you connect with her on social media on Twitter. It's at Green Queen of Mod. That's M-O-D. And then your blog. Your blog is sensational. It's www.thegreenqueenofmod.com. I don't know where to start. I mean, I was digging around on your blog, and you have an awesome basil-infused vodka with water and tomato juice recipe. And I go, oh, maybe we'll talk about cocktails, but I've never seen a wild persimmon.
You know, the wild persimmons were really interesting. They look like a giant sort of weedy, unattractive shrub in their natural state. They have a very pale bark and thin trunks. So they're, each persimmon is sort of a multitude of narrow trunks, like one base trunk that goes off into a bunch, kind of like a lilac or something along those lines, as opposed to, say, an apple tree. And the leaves on it are really tiny and sort of sage-colored and a little leathery. The house that I lived in was in the Edwards Plateau. So it was at the base of the hill country, and it was in a gully, floodplain, basically. We had a creek that, when there was water in it, ran through. So the land couldn't decide if it wanted to be a forest or a desert because it had prickly pear and a lot of scrubby trees, cedar, junipers, and such. So when we started clearing an area around the house just to keep it snake-free, I found these trees. And I've always been one that I liked prune trees. So I just started cutting off all of the little gnarly branches that pointed down. And when I was finished, I had these beautiful, just incredibly gorgeous trees, and they make a fruit. Unfortunately, it's not as pretty or as tasty as a real persimmon. It's not orange. It's kind of a dark brownish color. And it's almost more like a date. It has that kind of consistency. So I didn't do anything with it, but the deer loved it. And actually, so did my golden retriever then. She used to knock the fruit off and eat them and gain probably about 5 pounds during persimmon season. So they were truly lovely trees that I felt like I had discovered because I didn't ever hear anyone else talking about them.
You know, we have a lot of international listeners, Andrea. We're in 25 countries and a lot of city dwellers. And you started in apartments. When you said 5 acres, I heard gasping from the people in Tokyo, Japan, where they live in 500 square feet. What was it like, the climate difference between Texas and now Seattle, Washington?
Well, it was, of course, totally night and day. I had grown up on the East Coast in Syracuse, New York, so snow country and really a very solid four seasons. San Antonio is typical Central Texas weather, not as hot and dry as Dallas or the Panhandle, but very, very hot in the summer. And winters, you could wake up and have it be below freezing in the morning and go up to 80 by the end of the day. I mean, that was not completely commonplace, but it did happen. But water was always an issue there, and heat was always an issue. And everything was kind of brown come summer, because obviously we only had a well, and so I could not afford in either water use or electrical cost to pump to water much of my property. I had to rely on the rain, which is another reason why the native plants were such a good move. I didn't have to water them to keep them alive. And of course, Seattle gets a lot of rain, though most people probably don't know that our summers are actually quite dry. We can go a full month or more without any rain at all in the middle of summer, say July and August. So I had to be water wise, but everything perks back up gorgeously as soon as the rains come back, usually in late September. We're waiting. Climate change seems to have changed our climate a little bit, but I definitely did not have to worry about intense. I didn't have to xeriscape as some people who live in desert climates do. So I was really delighted because I had a lot of the weather patterns that were more similar to where I grew up, but we didn't and don't get a lot of snow. So I don't have to worry about things suffering through long freezes.
You know, Andrea, I've been listening to what the listeners have been sending in notes. So they've been writing emails. If you want to send a letter or a note or a question to the show, go to backtomygarden.com and click on Contact Us. Andrea, people have been ask the guests about their biggest mistakes in the garden. People love to hear, especially humorous stories when you can look back and laugh. Have you ever completely messed up in your garden?
Well, of course, my first biggest mistake in Texas was thinking that I could actually dig holes to plant things. And that, of course, I've already explained where that led. But when I started gardening here in Seattle, I gardened with things that I had not tried before, specifically Asiatic lilies. They weren't something that I had in gardens on the East Coast, and certainly not a San Antonio plant. And my first year, I went out and I planted my lily bulbs, and they came up and they flowered beautifully. And then as the summer went on, the big giant stalks got all brown and ugly looking, and so I cut them down. Unfortunately, I found out later that you're not supposed to do that. You have to treat them more like a daffodil or a tulip bulb, in the sense that you don't clean them up. They need those their stalks and their leaves to turn brown, because that's what ends up fertilizing the bulb. So my second year, and actually subsequent years, I didn't get nearly as many lily flowers. And that made me really sad. But I also, another big mistake, and this is something that is very easy to do with natives, I didn't check how aggressive some plants were before I planted them. And there are certain plants, any natives anywhere, it's going to be different for every area, but you really need to know, is this thing going to spread on its own? And how much trouble is it going to give the other plants in your garden when it's trying to spread? So I had to learn to literally pull things out, specifically native asters. And there's a native yellow iris that not only spreads like wildfire, it is very difficult to remove. So be careful when you're planting to make sure that you're not planting a bully that's going to take over your garden.
Excellent tips. I want to remind all our listeners, make sure you check out Andrea's blog at www.thegreenqueenofmod, that's M-O-D, just like it sounds, .com. Lots of tips. You share very generously, and you have so many hats and you're so busy. I wanted to ask you about your garden this season. What brought you joy, and was there anything that frustrated you?
Well, let's see. What brought me joy? Well, certainly all of the vegetables brought me a lot of joy, because it was a exceptional year for tomatoes here in Seattle. Got my first ripe tomato in July, which is almost unheard of, because Seattle unfortunately has very cool nights even through the summer. So you have to be really diligent when planting something that wants warm ground and warm nights like tomatoes. So the tomatoes were just spectacular this year. And of course, being half Italian, I love food that has a tomato base. And I put up so many quarts of roasted tomato sauce in my freezer that are going to hold us through the winter. So that was serious joy. And the other thing that always brings me joy in my garden is the native plants, especially the native Western columbine and a few of the other plants that I have planted that attract a ton of both bees and hummingbirds. So I know that most gardeners right now are very aware of the problem that we're having worldwide with bees, keeping bees alive, keeping bees nourished. And I have to tell you that having the native plants with a mixture of non-natives, so that there's a lot of flowering going on all time, just brought so many bees to my yard. I just enjoyed going out and sitting and trying to see how many different kinds of bees I had and trying to count them, but sometimes that just got nearly impossible. So I would have to say that keeping the pollinators in my garden was the thing that just made me very joyful. Every time I'd see a hummingbird or just see a bunch of bees hovering over some of my plants, I felt like I was doing at least something very positive for the world.
That makes me smile, because anytime I talk to gardeners, we're all kind of universally conscious of this conversation around pollinators, while the rest of the world is worried about the new iPhone or what's on TV.
That's so true. And that's why a lot of my blog posts talk about native plants and attracting pollinators to the garden. I learned a lot about bees this year. Probably one thing I learned about bees, and it was kind of fun, I've always had bird baths, taking care of the birds in the garden. And occasionally I would find that struggling bee in the bird bath that would be swimming for its life. And I'd get it out and put it on a leaf. And then when I started to really read up on bees and make sure I was doing everything I could for them, I found out that bees can't swim and that bees do drown very easily, even in a bird bath. But of course, like every other living thing on the planet, bees need water. So I learned how to create literally a bee bath, and that's by using a shallow dish, shallow bowl, a saucer of some kind, large. I tend to use plant trays, the little basin you'd put under a potted plant. And then you put rocks in that, not large ones, but enough rocks so that there's a surface of rocks, and then you pour the water in there. So you're basically giving the bees rocks to climb out on, but ways for them to take sips of water without falling in and drowning. And that was something that I learned this year and I thought was really cool. And I promoted it on the blog and through Twitter because it's so easy to do. It can be very pretty. I used nice rocks, pretty little rocks in mine. And you do see the bees coming to it. And it makes you feel good again that you're not accidentally killing bees and that you're providing something that they really need.
That's so wonderful. Make sure everybody go over to Andrea's blog at thegreenqueenofmod.com. How did the mod come about?
Well, the mod stands for moderation. I am actually the Green Queen of Moderation. I love living sustainably and I love living green. And I've been doing it for decades and decades. I have just turned 60 years old, so I came of age during the entire organic gardening and, didn't call it green back then, but the hippie movement that was back to nature and getting back to the garden. I always wondered if that line of yours was from Joni Mitchell's song about Woodstock, that time to get ourselves back to the garden. And yet, I am not a fanatic about anything. I realize that we cannot do everything exactly perfectly. And I realized, too, in looking on other blog sites, that there were a lot of people out there promoting, like, no plastic in your home at all, ever, and no eating this, ever, and no doing this, ever. And the reality is very few people can live that kind of life. So I'm here to promote the idea of do what you can. Try. Here's tips to make it easy. Here's things you can do, but don't make yourself crazy trying to be some sort of sustainability zealot that can't go to a restaurant or can't go grocery shopping because you have made this unrealistic commitment to eliminate things completely from your life. Until the rest of the world's going to do it, it's going to be very hard. And I think people can beat themselves up about trying to be perfect. And I think also when people have that attitude, they end up doing nothing at all because it's like, well, I can't do it 100%, so I'm not going to do it. And I'm trying to encourage people to do 25%, 50%, 75%. Just try to do something. Do it in moderation.
Let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play 5 quick questions. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Discover how to earn your first $500 as a new garden blogger. Get my simple 5-step system for creating your own second income doing what you love part-time. Download instantly for free my garden blogger blueprint at www.backtomygarden.com/secret. You know, Andrea, I just glanced at the clock and our time is whipping by.
Ah.
Now is the time in the show when we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
I've got them here.
This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with novice gardeners. You ready to play?
Okay, I am ready.
Question number one, and I changed it a little bit on you. What advice would you give to somebody who's afraid or believes they can't garden?
I would say to just try. Start small, start easy, start with something that you can feel like you can do, especially because gardening takes a lot of time and it also takes a financial investment. So pick one thing, try it, learn about it. Now that we have the internet, there is no excuse for not knowing how to plant something, grow something, harvest something, prune or care for something. It's all there. So go online, look for things that are easy. I would definitely recommend people, especially if they're on Twitter, to check out hashtag garden chat. You will find so much incredible advice. It's a group of gardeners, people like myself, and I think that may even be where Dave found out about me, who on Monday nights get together and we talk about gardening for 1 hour using that hashtag. And so get out there, try it, do it.
Dynamite. Yeah, hashtag garden chat. I thought, just a couple of ladies chatting. It's a million people.
It is.
Massive. And I love the wisdom. I mean, if you have a problem, you can usually find someone who knows the answer there.
That's absolutely true.
Question two. You've had different teachers and you've gardened in multiple climates. Is there a piece of advice? What's the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
I'd say, especially with plants like basil and mints and anything that cilantro, parsley, deadhead. If you want to keep that plant growing, deadhead. Deadhead your basil the minute those flowers start to come up. If you can't get to it to use, just cut those flowers off. The plant will keep putting out new shoots and grow beautifully. Ditto for broccoli, especially cilantro and plants that are tend to bolt. Deadhead. Deadhead flowers, you may get new growth again in the fall, but don't just let things go to seed too early.
Question number three. You mentioned the internet. And we'll send everybody over to your blog, but do you have any one or two favorite websites or favorite garden bloggers or resources that you can recommend?
I do. The first place I would send people would be to the nativeplantwildlifegarden.com. And that is a team of passionate professional gardeners all over North America. These are authors, writers, bloggers, botanists, gardeners, who all share the mission to promote the use of native plants. That is such a great resource to find out about native plants and how you can work them into your landscape easily and cost effectively. And then the other one is just www.plantnative.org. And the thing that's great about that site is they actually have a directory of native plant nurseries broken down by state. So you can't always find native plants in your Home Depots or your local gardening centers, and sometimes you have to search for them. So that plantnative.org is a great place to get yourself started on where you can buy native plants. And then there is also a National Native Plant Society that I would check out, because, again, they often have links to local sources and sales that might be in your area.
You've probably seen people trying to grow the wrong thing in the wrong zone a lot.
Oh, absolutely. I think that probably was something that I had to learn pretty quickly, coming from central New York to central Texas and then up to Seattle, was that, wow, their climate and everything is different in each of these places. And things that grew beautifully in one place will die very quickly sometimes in the other. So yeah, definitely have to be aware of your zone.
Question number four. Can you recommend a favorite garden book?
You know, I really mulled that one. And I think I have a favorite book here right now, which is Native Plants of the Pacific Northwest. But what I would recommend for people to do, if they're interested in natives, is to go on wherever, actually, whether you want to buy from Amazon or not, go on to Amazon, Google gardening, you know, with native plants, put that in as your search, and it'll bring up a multitude of books specific to your area. Because remember, they're natives, so some things are native all over the country and all over the world, but other things are very, very specific. So Google or go on to Amazon, search gardening with native plants, and find the book for your region.
And question number five is a fun one. People love to grow things and have their neighbors say, "What the heck is that?" Like to be the first person or the only person in the neighborhood with a plant. Is there anything you're thinking about or toying with the idea of experimenting in your garden next season?
Well, let me see. I'm trying to think. That is a different question from your original question five. As far as anything new for next year, you know, there really isn't. But the one thing I would recommend for people to grow is two things, actually, because there are two. One is to grow milkweed. And that is not something that people tend to grow in gardens. But we are all very aware that the monarch butterfly is in great decline, on the verge of becoming extinct. And of course, everyone loves those beautiful orange and black butterflies. So milkweed is one of their main sources of food and where they lay their eggs. And if you can, and if you, especially if you live someplace that'll allow you to grow whatever you want, because unfortunately some developments will not, plant milkweed if it grows in your area. Or plant columbines. And here in the Pacific Northwest, and actually anywhere in the northern part of the United States, you can plant the Western columbine, and it makes a beautiful yellow and orange columbine that is so great at attracting bees and hummingbirds. And I will say that if you cannot find a source for them, go on my website, send me a message, I'll send some seed. I have a mason jar full of seed, and I'm willing to share it with anyone who wants it.
That is so wonderful. And people can reach you through Twitter at Green Queen of Maud. And then you also have a contact us form on your blog, I noticed, at www.thegreenqueenofmaud.com. I think your blog's sensational. I saw you had your spaghetti sauce, tomato sauce up. I thought we made like 80 jars of salsa, so I know how much work you put into yours.
Well, the thing that's great about that tomato sauce is that you do not have to you do seed, but it doesn't have to be that mush seed. You just pop the seeds out and you don't have to skin the tomatoes. So it's definitely a great sauce for somebody who's too busy to even contemplate the idea of canning with having to, you know, do the blanching, the tomatoes and peeling off the skins and then worrying it through the processor to get all of the seeds out. This is easy as pie. You just need to be able to monitor your oven for about 2.5 hours.
You're an awesome guest. We barely have scratched the surface and we're nearly out of time. I think we're going to have you back. What do you think?
Oh, I would love it. There's nothing I love more than talking about, especially native plant gardening and just gardening in general for people as a way to keep themselves connected to nature. I just think it's so important.
You know, Andrea, I want to give you the last word to the listeners today. Do you have a pearl of wisdom or maybe a note of encouragement for our listeners on their gardening adventures?
I think probably the main thing I would say is don't give up. Keep trying. If something doesn't work, learn. Try to figure out why. Sometimes it's completely beyond your control, a weather situation or you didn't get a good plant to begin with. But don't think that just because you had something die on you that you can't garden. Everybody's thumb is a little green.
Wonderful. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Dave. I enjoyed myself and can't wait to listen to a lot more of your other podcasts.
Hello, garden lover. It's Dave. All of the links, resources, and websites mentioned in this episode will be posted at www.backtomygarden.com/58. If you enjoyed this episode, please come to the website and click share and help us reach more brand new gardeners. Have an amazing day. Happy gardening.